find a farmer.
Yeah.
Go to their farm.
Here's a thought.
Shake their hand. Trust them.
Yeah. See the cow. Welcome back to Appalachian Farmcast. It's Cody Brabham from Window Glen Farm.
And Tyler Rice from Pike Mountain Farm.
We are...
And that's it.
Yeah, that's
just us.
Welcome. You just got the two of us. We're trying something a little different this week, so this will be a little bit of an experiment. We're both mobile and not sitting together, so it's almost like COVID times again, right?
That's exactly what it felt like. It was weird.
Yeah.
I had that deja vu moment there.
Yeah. We did some in a men's group at the time. We did a couple Zoom calls at that time, and it was like six guys on the screen, and you're all given the virtual waves and all of that weird stuff. So, people, if it seems a little outside the norm, we are a little off this week, but. Yeah, so things are changing. If you've listened over the last few weeks at all, you've heard Ryan went rogue and decided to... No, Ryan took on a good opportunity down in North Carolina, and we're wishing him nothing but the best. So we'll keep you updated with him, and he'll be dropping in from time to time. We didn't tell him that yet, but...
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I threatened to delete his number, but I didn't. I didn't delete it.
I just programmed it in as the name Pansy. Still just Ryan. don't beat me up, Ryan.
Yeah.
So anyway, what's up, Tyler? What are we going to talk about this week?
Well, I went to. Oh, this is not going to work with my phone here. Okay. I need my phone for my notes. Ugh. All right. So I went to the grazing conference. We discussed that a little bit. The Appalachian Grazing Conference, that is.
That was in Morgantown?
It's here in Morgantown, yes.
Okay.
And this is the... Is at least the second time I've been to it? Maybe it's the third time. I think it is the third time now. But anyway... it was good. Sorry, I'm just getting situated. Okay. So the thing I always walk away from it with is that I need more ground. I need more cattle.
Right.
I need more lambs. I need more fence.
Yes. That seems to be so logical.
I need more water. I need more. It's like, you know, the gist of all of it is move your animals as often as possible,
right?
Basically. And it's there's very few people that attend it or presenting or whatever that do even like daily moves. I mean, even us here at our farm with like our sheep moving them, you know, about every 3 days, like that's people are like, oh yeah, we don't do that, you know, like it. So we're kind of...
So wait, it's a like lot a of them aren't doing it yet.
They're not at that point. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But a lot of them have way bigger operations too.
Sure.
And you're talking to a lot of people that are, you know, not like us that are beginner farmers. They're kind of, they've been doing it for a long time, or their family's been doing it for a long time. And
oh, so they've probably just got some interest in changing from that old mindset of continuous grazing to getting into more of this regenerative. Okay. That makes sense.
Right. Right. Exactly. now the keynote speaker was a guy, I had never heard of him beforehand, but, his name is Fred Provenza. I think that's how you say his last name.
Okay.
And,
he a local?
He was great. No, he's from out west. I think living in Montana, he said now, but he mentioned being in all a bunch of different states out west. But
okay.
So it was a lot of different, you know, it's different kind of grazing out there. You're grazing, you know, dry land stuff, and it's different species of grass. So it's just a totally different kind of thing, but a lot of the same. He talked about, you know, a lot of things we talk about with the whole farm itself, like food and letting the animals kind of tell you what they need and thinking about them, how they would want to behave. A lot of stuff that we're, you know, we've picked up and from people like Joel Salatin and stuff like that. Like, he didn't mention him by name or anything like that, okay. But a lot of the same ideas and things. So it was, it wasn't what I expected. A lot of the stuff there gets kind of academic, at times. It's a lot of people presenting what they're working on, stuff like that. And now this guy was in academia for a while too, but
is Montana one of those states that has the like the government grazing and not government, that's not the right word for it, you know what I mean, the rangeland grazing where people get permits to graze the rangelands?
I don't know, probably.
Okay,
but I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know.
Now, okay. So was it a big turnout?
No. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it was big for what they expected, but it seemed like less people than last year. Oh, well, okay. It's every 2 years, so less people than 2 years ago. And then, you know, the year before that, they had canceled it because of COVID stuff. And then the year I didn't go to it, Teddy Gentry was the keynote speaker. I don't know if you know who that is, but if Ryan was here, he would know who that was.
Well,
he is the bass player for the band Alabama.
My mind went to music when you said Gentry.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the guy from Montgomery Gentry that sadly passed away, but no.
See, that's where I can say RIP and it's legit this time.
Yeah, Troy. That was Troy.
T. Rooley.
Yep. In a helicopter crash. It's crazy. But anyway, this guy, Teddy Gentry, who it's like after, you know, he's been the biggest country band of perhaps all time.
Right.
You know, Alabama's no small band.
Sure. I give him that.
So this guy, he helped produce, you've heard of South Pole Cattle?
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't know what the right word is, but like he helped invent them.
Yeah, develop the breed. Okay.
Yeah. Like it's wild. So he was there talking about that. I guess, I mean, they were saying some of the guys that had heard his presentation that said, you know, he'd be on the bus going down the road, like reading textbooks about cattle in the back of the bus.
Oh, wow.
While the other guys were, you know, playing music and practicing and stuff. But it was pretty neat. But I didn't get to go that year. And I went 2 years ago, and Greg Judy was there presenting.
Nice.
He was keynote. He was great. I really like his stuff. But yeah, it was good. So it's good for that. And it's good, like, you know, you're going to, you know, run in, you know, I hate the word networking, but that's really what you end up doing is a lot of, you just meet people.
Yeah.
Or reconnect with people that you've seen there last year or talked to, and you just kind of,
right,
you know, it's one of those things when you get there and there's like tables and you think, you get that awkward high school feeling where like, well, do I want to sit down at this table? And then what if I can't control who sits beside me? Like, I don't. And you're like, well, look, I don't want that guy to sit by me, you know? But, so you kind of, you know, but you never know who you're going to meet. So it's fun.
Sure.
And it ends up being people who are normally, you know, just like you, but that's just the way it goes, I guess.
Like they say on Old Brother Art, thou press the flesh.
Yeah.
When he was politicking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's fun for that, but it's like they had a vendor show. And so I went to this a long time ago before we had any dreams of farming. Seriously, anyway.
Yeah.
And we played music at this because they have a banquet, like dinner the one night, and they always have a band of some kind playing kind of in the background.
Okay.
So my wife was in a band that played at it the 1 year. So I went and like kind of just helped them set up and hung out and was like, man, this place is cool. Like, I don't know what they're doing here, but there's tractors in the other room, like a big vendor show.
Yeah.
But it's never been that as big as that when I've been there. But anyway, so then we played at it 1 year too, but, and they had a good band this year. Same band that we had play at our farm crawl. So it was fun.
Oh, okay.
To see those guys.
Now this is the event. Didn't you send Ryan and me a picture. There was some presenters that would might be considered off the beaten path a little bit.
Yeah, that was the keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was.
Oh yeah, yeah. At first, I'm like, I don't know about this, yeah. But it was. It. I ended up really enjoying it.
Oh, good, yeah. Good.
He just kind of came at it from a very, I don't know how else to say this other than to say it, but like, where at least me, I come to a lot of conclusions of like, yeah, this makes sense. That's how these things were created.
Yeah.
This guy came at it more, and I don't know this, but it's just the vibe I got of like, this evolving. Is how these things evolved to be. Yeah,
I see that.
If you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
So, but all the points were like spot on. I mean, everything he said, you're like, well, yeah, of course that makes sense. That's just kind of like common sense.
Sure.
Kind of things like that. Like he was talking about goats eating wood rat houses. Like, so what happens is, and he's, you know, these, I guess, wood rats build these little stick houses out in the pastures.
Okay.
And these goats, like the goats that thrived were the, were the herds of goats that targeted these wood rat houses. And they figured out they were going for like the bathroom, and there's something in the goat urine or in the rat urine that these goats like clued in on and knew they needed and they were lacking, and they would eat that, and then it would allow them to eat other things.
Okay.
It was wild. Yeah.
Wow.
So just kind of one of those things where you're like, of course we don't understand everything.
Yeah.
There's things out there that we don't, you know, like it's that you kind of, I don't know, you get that thing of like, you think that you got everything figured out and science has everything figured out, but there's
not,
the more
not
you know,
quite.
The more you don't know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was kind of that kind of stuff. But they gave out copies of his book, which I haven't read yet, but it was, it's called Nourishment, like what animals can teach us about rediscovering nutritional wisdom. And that was like, his whole thing was like, there's these common like ideas of nutritional wisdom where like, basically it was like, don't eat processed food, eat food that's just grown as close to you as possible, that right. kind of stuff, you know,
right.
That was the basics of it. But, and he's like, we can kind of look to these animals because they have that instinct still intact and aren't, you know, they don't fall into commercials and things that distract us.
I'm sure. So,
it was interesting.
Nice.
But yeah, and then you get a bunch of cool freebies and stuff like that too. So I got a copy of his book. I mean, you pay for it, obviously, with going to the thing, but, I grabbed you. You're not here to get it, but I'll get it to you. A 2024 grazing calendar.
Nice.
A wall calendar, yeah. From courtesy of, let's see, West Virginia Conservation Agency, Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
United States Department of Agriculture, and WVU Extension.
Look at here. Nice
black Angus on the cover and some red Angus on the back.
I can almost see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. I was holding it around in the air while no one else can see it. And then I grabbed you a little pocket-sized graziers, as some people call it there, notebook.
It's I need
a
that.
A little tracker. Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, that's one of the things. This will be year two that I'm collecting my grazing data for that NRCS program.
Oh, yeah, it'll be perfect for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was kind of a no-brainer. I couldn't pass it up because it was, I was already tracking it. And loosely, I should say, I mean, I'd make little notes of it in my phone, but now they want to know what we track it in the sense of how many head of animals I turn into a paddock at a time, what the average height of the forage is when we go in,
yeah.
Average height when I come out. And the dates.
Okay.
And you do that for the whole grazing season, then turn it in. And
yeah, which is exactly what this book has for you to track.
Okay. Oh, perfect.
Yeah, now. Like it says, it's got livestock, and then it says number and class, which...
Nice. You
know, number and species, I guess. Well, it'd be different, I guess, if you had different things. But yeah, so you got date in, forage height, date out, forage height, and then special notes.
Oh, that's perfect then.
Yeah. So you put like, it says milk production, weather, etc.
Okay.
And then you do it for like each paddock.
Okay.
And if you added fertilizer, you can put that in there too. But yeah. But it tells you in the beginning of it, it's got a lot of cool information in here. I'm going to put my phone down and look at this. I didn't even notice this in the beginning, but it's got all kind of grazers math in it.
Okay. For,
you know, how many acres, animals per acre, pasture intakes for body weight, grass, estimated pounds of forage per square inch. Oh, man. All kind of little charts.
A lot of it.
Things. I saw one here when I was flipping through. Let's see. This is exciting podcasting. Hear me flip through this thing. But I had one just talking about like, oh, yeah, here. So all different body condition scores. So you got, you know, it's telling you how to know if your beef are ready or if your sheep are ready, your horse is ready, I guess, ready for the racetrack. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question I have. Did anybody up there have you seen those grazing sticks?
Yeah, I got one of those too. You want one?
Well, I have
like four of them in my garage.
I got one last summer at the Katahdin Expo in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're all a little different.
Okay. Yeah, they handed them out, and I know it's supposed to be pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah.
But I'm not following it all the way. There was no crash course.
Yeah.
So I
unintendedly, mistakenly went to a like grazing stick 101 talk on this thing on Saturday morning. It was more like utilizing pasture, but it was basically like utilize pasture by using this grazing stick.
Right.
So they went through it step by step on that particular one. Then I came home and looked at the ones I got last year or 2 years ago, and they were different.
Okay. So
these were from the U.S. Department of Ag, somebody, but it was like up around like in northern Pennsylvania. So they're all different, but this one had like little dots, like you slid under the grass and you count how many dots you could see, and that tell you how much grass you had. And then you could also measure the height, obviously.
Interesting.
It's neat. We would do a whole episode on grazing sticks once I get one out and start using it.
Yeah. You can send me through Grazing Stick 101.
Let's figure it out. Yeah.
There's probably a YouTube video for it.
There is, but like I said, they're all a little different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a few different ones here. What else was I going to say about things? Yeah, so the vendors, like, it was a little bit less vendors. One of the guys I sat with for a part of it, he was hoping there would be, like a Premier One or Kencove or somebody that produces, like, high-quality grazing supplies.
Sure.
But there wasn't. You know, my fellow Timeless Fence dealer guy was there, and he didn't even bring that much stuff as he normally does. But he didn't have a lot of he doesn't have all the little, you know, grazing trinkets. I don't know what you call it, but just little, you know, reels and step in posts and all that sort of stuff. That's interesting to see. Like there's nothing
his
like that.
His stuff's
there,
more permanent.
Would hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think I want to say that 2 years ago, there was somebody from a guy had some Kencove stuff there. It was pretty cool to see it in person. Like you can see that stuff in the magazine or on the internet, but to see it in person is different. There was a guy from Lewisburg had, I'm going to get it wrong, but it was like the Easy Fence system thing. It went on like this huge contraption, went on the back of a 3-point hitch on your tractor, and it had to be a big tractor, at least 100 horsepower. I mean, this thing was huge.
Really?
And he could put up to, I know this sounds crazy, but I'm pretty sure he could put, it had 10 spinning jennies on it.
Wow.
And he could put up like 10 strands of high tensile in one pass.
Oh, gee.
And it had like a little space. It was a really cool setup. I don't know how much I don't know if he, honestly, I'm not sure if he was selling the thing or he was selling like him coming and putting Vince in with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just briefly talked to him. He handed me a pamphlet, but
if it's that big, I bet it's him coming and doing it because who's going to be able to afford
right
that contraption?
I mean, you couldn't. Exactly. I mean, it's thing. Yeah.
And yeah. Then, yeah, I immediately think, well, what kind of terrain can you see? It's got to be very conducive to taking a tractor over it.
Oh yeah. You'd have to be able to, yeah. Well, I mean, he was, you know, out of the Greenbrier Valley. It's a whole different world down there.
It is. Yeah, that's,
you know, mild. Be fencing along and falling a sinkhole inside of a giant cave if you're not careful.
So down there. Did I tell you about the time? So I lived in Lewisburg. I've mentioned this.
Yeah.
I got a call in my trapping days. This guy called and he said he did embryo transfer calves.
Okay.
So real high dollar calves hitting the ground to these surrogate cows that he owned. And he said, Cody, they're a minimum. He said, calf hits the ground, it's $1,000. And this is, oh, shoot, this is
not today's numbers.
No.
Feeder calves are selling for $3 a pound right now.
Right. This is probably the equivalent of $2,500, $3,000 now. But anyway,
wow.
He said, they're just disappearing. He said, I'm not finding any trace of predation, what? No blood, no nothing. And I think he was up to 8 or 10 that were just completely gone. So I drove out and I'm riding this pasture, you know, all these big limestone outcroppings and everything. I look down in this dip and I see a dark spot. I go over and look. There was a sinkhole the size of a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And we went and got a light and shined it down in. It was probably 10 foot deep, 15 foot deep.
How many? Say that again. 15?
10 or 15 foot deep.
Okay.
Just randomly popped up. And there were 4 calves laying in it. And the last one was alive. We fished it out of there. But, and got looking around. He had a couple more. And then just, I guess pastures that big, they don't see them as frequently as probably you or I get to see and intimately know the pasture. And yeah, he had a lot of dead calves from these sinkholes, but pretty crazy.
Wow. Yeah. I wondered about that because one of the other presenters down there was a lady that owns and operates Swift Level Meats and Swift Level Farm. And she was talking about holes popping up in her pastures. And somebody asked if she'd ever had lost any steers. She just finishes steers. And she said no, but I was like, I bet there's somebody's had lost something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the guy.
Interesting. Well,
okay.
Yeah, it's,
so would you recommend
like that?
Would you recommend our listeners who are interested in this type of vocation?
If you are like,
who's the ideal crowd?
The ideal crowd to me is somebody like, I'm borderline ideal crowd. I feel like, like if you are wanting to have a homestead and have a couple animals in your backyard, this is probably not the conference for you.
Okay.
You could probably spend the money because it's around like $200 ish in that price range.
Yeah.
Which does seem like a lot, but you know, if you're from out of town, you got to stay at the hotel and it's at the, but, and it's only a day and a half really.
Okay.
So, there's money spent other places, I think. Because it's like, you know, this is like really tailored towards people who have a lot of cattle or a lot of sheep or a lot of animals on pasture or who really want to have a lot of animals on pasture and want to make the most of that. And maybe, you know, see, it's really like kind of a lot of like academic things, I don't know how to say this, but like they're presenting, you know, papers that grad students are working on and different projects and things.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then there would be some of the presenters that would be farmers that
are. So it's a more technical
like putting it
approach.
Into practice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it can, it would be very overwhelming if you were like brand new to
farming. Even the homesteading scene.
Yeah. And it's kind of one of those things too, where it's like, yeah, I get it. We move animals. Like if you get that, like you're probably good.
Okay.
You know, but is it a good place to go and meet people that have a lot of cattle? And if you want to buy calves and things like absolutely. You meet people.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I mean, I talked to a guy that if you run short on lambs from me, like he had hundreds of them available. Oh. So, but he's, okay. 5.5 hours away. So,
yeah,
you know, there's those kind of things, but, yeah. You know, that, so you meet people just like any other, you know, it's a part of the reason you go to any conference is to, you know,
sure.
Network.
That's so. Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but I wrote down here big takeaways. The one I forgot was I had more land, more sheep, more cattle, more fence, and don't overgraze. That's the other one. You're just killing your grass.
I broke that cardinal rule this winter. I did.
Yeah. But, oh, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a nice little recap on that. Well, what about what'd you miss at home, or what you've been into at home? Not what'd you miss. What's been going on? You mentioned last time, have your chickens come in yet? Your meat birds?
We are at, they are hat. Well, no, let's see. As we're recording tomorrow morning, our turkeys will hatch.
Okay.
Not here at the farm, but at the hatchery in Iowa.
Nice.
And they will be here Wednesday morning. So we'll have 100 turkeys on the ground. Well, not on the ground, in the brooder. On Wednesday morning.
That's a lot of turkeys.
And then, And then Thursday, we'll have 450 meat chicks.
Wow.
Showing up, going in the other brooder. So.
Wow.
It's about to begin.
Yep. Heck yeah.
Like the calm before the storm right now. Yeah.
You got your shipment of feed in, I'm sure.
Yes, I got feed in hand. I got the brooders all cleaned out. I just got to get them bedded and get the lights in there and get them turned on and ready.
Now, are you the type, do you go through at the end of a run, do you clean up all of your feeders and waters, or do that before the next group comes in?
Sometimes I clean them right after they leave. That's the ideal time to do it.
Okay.
But occasionally I leave them go. But I think they're all clean now because they're in here in the garage. So
nice.
Yeah. And then now we don't, like the brooder, as far as the wood chips, I don't clean it out every batch. I just throw fresh wood chips on top and build it up.
Right.
And I cleaned it out and there was like 1.5 feet deep of wood chips and, you know, among other things that come out of chickens.
Yeah.
So, but it was really dry and it was, you know, it'd be great if I had a manure spreader, just spread it out on the field somewhere.
Sure.
But I put it in a pile and we'll use it for something. But
yeah. Okay.
What else do we
The birds coming.
Pretty much
cattle.
It.
Yeah, you still got cattle and the pigs. They're still hanging out.
Yeah, we got some pigs leaving next month. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I don't know when we're getting piglets again. I need to check on that. But check with my piglet providers.
Yeah. I talked with your one. She told me she was going to have a couple litters this spring and summer.
Oh, okay. Good. I'll see her at sunrise service on Sunday. Our churches do a joint sunrise service.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Well, hopefully she'll be there. She's there last year, so.
She sent me.
And their church is doing breakfast afterwards, so I'm definitely going to free breakfast.
No doubt. No doubt. She sent me a video, some pictures of the lambs and some videos the other day with their current lamb weights. She's got 3 of my ewe lambs that she turned bottle babies and one ewe lamb from a friend of mine. They're just, I mean, they are living their best life.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Ryan was talking about it last time.
Yeah. Yeah. 4 ewe lambs in diapers.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah. They're living it up. But
what are you doing?
Well, speaking of your chicken madness, I did a thing. Last year, I made a big step what I felt to be a big step. I reserved a butcher date.
Yeah.
For 200 chickens, but I never ordered the chickens. And
that was last year. It was the year before that you did the...
Yeah, the year before I did...
Took 30 from here.
Yes. Yeah, you brooded them, and then I bought 30 off you that were ready to go on pasture. I had you do the hard part. This year I set up my appointment for 200 birds again, and thankfully the woman at the butcher shop didn't recognize my voice. I didn't want her to be like, oh great, here's that Brabham guy.
Okay. I cancel them too. They got a list a mile long of people wanting in. It's fine.
So I reserved a spot for 200 birds, and then I think I was talking to somebody and I went, oh shoot, I probably actually need to find and make sure I can get birds for that date. And I started looking at a couple, just while I had my iPad out, I was looking at some bigger hatcheries, and nobody was having more than 10 or 15 birds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was right at the time, I guess, a lot of people were wanting to start getting them, but they were booked out. The big hatcheries weren't showing anything until like September.
Yeah.
But I called your place where you get yours from, and I said, please tell me there's a chance I can get close to 200 birds. She said, yeah, I'll put you down for 200. So it went official to the point that I even put a credit card on file.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So chickens are happening. I now have to.
And how long do you have?
They show up in. I think they hatch on tax day.
Okay.
So what's that? The 15th.
Yeah.
And so I'll probably have them. They're coming from Iowa, like you said. So I'll probably have them on the 17th or something.
Nice.
So yeah, I've got to get. I'll have to go back and listen to our chicken episode again, or come just sneak through your farm when you're not there and look around to see what all I need to buy, feeders and water wise. I think I told you this, but to everybody else, my plan on brooding said meat chickens is I'm going to put a liner in the floor of my sheep trailer. Because I don't have electric access down at the barn or where I'm planning on putting them. So I'm going to brood them in my sheep trailer.
Yeah.
With some wood chips and the liner and all that stuff. So I can run some heat lamps out there and get them going before I put them. And I'm still up in the air whether I'm going to do the Salatin style chicken tractors or if I'm going to buy a couple more rolls of netting and then just some really portable shade shelters with water and feed and all that stuff. So yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm running out of time. I'll do something.
Do you follow Gross Family Farms, Luke Gross from Gross Farm Family Farms on Instagram?
Like Grove, Grove?
No, Gross as like Groce.
Oh, I would have never spelled Gross that way.
I know. It's interesting.
Gross Family. I'm writing it down. Gross Family Farm.
I went to a workshop that he put on and went to his farm, and he doesn't do any tractors for his poultry.
Oh.
He does all like open setup with the netting. And his, just flip through his pictures once you find him, and you'll... He's got all kind of, like his shelters are like so simple that you're like, why didn't I think of that? Yeah.
Okay.
And they're really effective. And he's, you know, really similar climate to us. He's in he's in Indiana, but a little farther south, but like right outside of Louisville, Kentucky, on the other side of the river from there.
When I did the 30, I took a sheet of plywood and put some wooden feet on it. Had their water hanging from it, and had it as a shade shelter for them. and it worked. But I think we'll need substantially more than that in place for 200 birds. So yeah, I'll definitely
a lot of tables to move.
Okay. Yeah. I wrote down Gross Family Farm, and I spelled it wrong twice, but I got it right now.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, yeah. So, chickens are coming. I'll get the rest of that equipment put out. Big news. We're done lambing.
Oh.
Sooner
than you thought? I thought it was going to be a couple weeks when I talked. I guess it was a little while when we talked.
So, I've got my lamb book here. And I had started on February 13th, and I finished on March 22nd.
Okay.
So I would consider that more strung out than what I would like to be. Because what's that? Roughly a month and a week, so 5 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Ideally. And in the past, the last 3 or 4 years, I've completed lambing start finish 21-22 days. Had that last one went. She was a first timer. I probably left the ram in just a little too long, because other than that I would have been done a week before. But she's good. Little ram laying on the ground. Or not little.
Oh, but good.
Yeah,
littler than everyone else, because he's a month younger than some, I guess. Yeah.
But, I mean, I'll have to get my numbers total. I think total we hit just at 40 or a little above lambs.
Nice.
And I think it wound up being pretty close. We were slightly heavier on ewe lambs.
Okay.
So, and that's a little teaser, if we can call it that, for everybody. I'm going to do a deep dive, maybe our next recording. We're going to do a little bit of a deep dive on lambing season and preparation for first timers, or just to kind of tell what I do at my place, because it's lambing season is a unique time at Winnow Glen Farm. But
yeah,
I'll be glad these night checks are done.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
So, let's see what else. So I'd had, I put a post up saying we were about done lambing, and in a couple of these, you know, whether it was a homesteading group or a Katahdin group, and somebody said something about, well, how do you control the worm load when they're in confinement like that? And the fact that I got compared to somebody doing confinement sheep raising, it hurt. Like it hurt my pride.
Yeah.
Because at the time of the pictures, they're in a barn on straw. But I did that because I think I mentioned to you guys, I had a couple get kind of wormy looking, from their sacrificial paddock. I don't have a setup to run a dry lot. So they've had access to this same paddock all winter. And it had gotten eaten down and overgrazed. And that was, I knew it was happening. I was just going to allow it for a while. But I saw it catching up to a couple of these yearlings. I pulled them all in the barn, closed them in there. And they'd been closed up for 4 or 5 days. But I let them out today. The sun was shining. There's probably close to 60 head on that nice green paddock for probably 4 or 5 hours, and they got to get some grazing in, and it was nice. You know, everybody did their thing. The lambs did their races, and then everybody got their bellies full, laid down, just soaked up sunshine. They were accompanied, get this, they were accompanied by Maeve, old Mayhem Maeve.
Yep.
She spent the night in the barn last night with them, had her own little catty corner in there I made out of the creep gate area so she could have her food and get away from everybody if she wanted to. She was well behaved, did real well today, but why did I have her in there and not with Fergus, you ask?
Yes, why did you?
Well, so get this. We were in the house yesterday, and my wife's on the phone with her sister, and I just hear her yelling, "We're going to have puppies."
Oh, no. I was afraid that's what you were going to say.
And I run over to the window and immediately go, uh-oh. And I just run for the garage to get my boots. And I am running as fast as I can down there. He's trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
But, and I think with dogs, like this term of dogs tying up, isn't that what they say?
Yeah, I think so.
Or locked up, or anyway,
yeah.
he was trying to get some business done. I don't think he was successful, but I left him in Ram School, and Maeve is in with the ewes and the lambs, so we'll keep an eye on him.
Yeah,
but I'll do puppies in the future. I would prefer to not do a litter quite yet.
Yeah, be you know.
There's plenty of other stuff going on.
Right. Although you'd be able to get the word out on the podcast when you got them.
Right.
Let's see what else. So that's all about all you got going. Do you want to hit on a couple? We haven't done news stories in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't. I saw one. Why don't you go first while I'm pulling up my one from today?
So I've got a couple different ones.
I'm a little nervous you're going to take mine because I've only got one.
Well, then go first.
Okay. So it's actually, this is a local, well, it was covered by local news.
It's probably not. I wasn't probably taking it then.
But it's a national story. Okay, the title from Channel 12 WBOY says...
Oh, this is local.
Yeah. Chick-fil-A is changing its chicken.
This was one of mine.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
So if you haven't heard, Chick-fil-A is switching from... Let's see. What they... their plan is to switch up the requirements for the kind of chicken purchased from the current no antibiotics ever to the no antibiotics important to human medicine.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the kind of title where Ryan would just go, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
And to read the article... the way they covered it anyway, like it says here, NAE, the no antibiotics ever, means no antibiotics of any kind were used in raising the animal, whereas the other one restricts the use of those antibiotics that are important to human medicine and commonly used to treat people, and allows use of animal antibiotics only if the animal and those around it were to become sick. Well, here's the thing. As a farmer... And as a caretaker of livestock in general, I don't think, well, I shouldn't say this. People like me and you are not going to be just giving animals antibiotics just to do it. But I'm not going to let an animal suffer on my place.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. So.
And the top comment under that story was, so is the chicken going to taste different?
I mean, it's valid. It's a valid concern. Yeah. No, it's not. It's probably, it might be a little bigger. So the article I found was from AP News.
Okay.
Straight out of Atlanta. Hometown of Chick-fil-A.
I'll say that's HQ, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And it, you know, said the same stuff that you said, but they added in this article that, you know, livestock producers have long used antibiotics to boost rapid weight gain in animals such as chicken, pigs, cows, and sheep, improving their profitability of businesses.
Yeah.
However, in the past decade, many nations, including the U.S., have begun to restrict the practice, yada, yada, that worries about, you know, antibiotic resistant antibiotic resistance growing. That's what they're worried about. You know? So, but so this is saying it's coming from like top down from Tyson.
Okay.
Is really, I think this is what this article goes into, is that they're doing away with the no antibiotics ever. And it's a Chick-fil-A thing where they're worrying now about availability of that no antibiotic ever.
Okay.
And Tyson's been in the news lately too about laying people off and wanting to hire migrants. I don't know. It's a whole thing, but so however you feel about that, but, yeah, it's just kind of one of those things. What it makes me think is like people that think Chick-fil-A is not fast food and it's okay to eat.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
It's still fast food. It's still bad for you. It's still like, these are the same, these chickens are still going to be raised in a barn in a group of 20,000.
Right.
It's just that if they start to look sick, they're going to give them antibiotics now.
Yeah.
Or they still, I mean, they're the same, they're just buying different chickens. But where before, a lot of other chickens are given a low dose antibiotic to grow faster. I mean, that's a common thing. I mean, I get the magazines where I order waters and different things from, and they all have like medicators that you hook up in your chicken houses or your pig houses or whatever to, you know, medicate these animals.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And I'm the, you know, I can't figure it out. Like these chickens only live 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So I just,
with withdrawal times and everything, it's
right. Right. It just makes me wonder, I guess. And if that's something you're worried about, then just don't eat at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I know it hurts.
And
I know we're still going to occasionally, but
yeah.
You just, I mean, yeah. So the other one I had is similar to this.
Okay.
Of like figuring out what the things actually mean when people say them. But this was all over the farming, homesteading interwebs last couple weeks. But so the U.S. Department of Agriculture unveiled some new rules on country of origin labeling. This is a big thing people have been pushing for, because you can take a product, you know, you can go to Walmart. I'm picking on Chick-fil-A and Walmart and Tyson today, but what's new? So you can go to Walmart and see some beef in there that says product of the United States of America.
Okay.
Or product of U.S. or made in the USA or whatever.
Right.
And that beef could be raised in any number of countries that we have trade agreements with. And the only thing that has to happen is that product, that beef has to be repackaged in the United States in some form. Then it can be a product of the United States because it's like a value added product. So they could, you know, they could literally send carcasses over or like primal cuts or all these different things from who knows where. We don't know. You don't know. You can't find out as a consumer and get one of those, you know, a pound of hamburger that was ground in the United States, and then this says product of the United States, that you would think. So now what they're saying, it's like a voluntary reporting where it's not, it's either just not going to say that, and then you can just assume it's not from the United States, or it's going to say it, but there's no like enforcement behind it.
Yeah.
And it's all voluntary.
I got to think if it's
like, it's, there's just nothing to it.
Right.
It's a rule. Everybody got excited about it, but you can read, I mean, I can't, I don't know. I could go and read this whole article, but you know, look at it and read it. But like, it doesn't mean anything.
No. If they're labeling it product of, not grown in or raised in America, you might want to raise your eyebrow at it. Or better yet, just go to your local farmer's market.
Find a farmer.
Yeah.
Go to their farm.
Here's a thought.
Shake their hand. Trust them.
Yeah. See the cow eating in the field first.
Right. 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 Yeah. So, you know, there's the article that I found was from like Colorado, somewhere. And it was basically saying that people are divided on this new rule in the Colorado livestock industry, basically just saying, well, this is going to hurt like some of our, you know, trade partners by people thinking their beef is inferior and this and that. And it's like, well, I mean, maybe some of them it is inferior. Like, I don't know. It just like, it's going to hurt people by telling them the truth. I don't understand. That seemed like a strange concern to me, but I mean, it's baby steps in the right direction. And I guess that's how government works, but there's a lot more that could be done.
Oh yeah. No doubt about it.
So, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know, people. I don't know. I'm not giving you financial advice here at all. But if you know a farmer and they have beef, build a relationship with them, because I feel like beef's going to be harder and harder to find beef that you can know what it is and where it came from.
Right.
You know, there's fires going on right now in West Virginia and Virginia that are harming farmland.
Yeah.
And then people want to know about these Texas wildfires. They're estimating like 70,000 cattle have been lost in those fires. And beef prices are, you know, as high as they've perhaps
possibly ever been. Right.
So things are going to be harder to find.
Yeah.
And more expensive when you do. So
you remember, when was it, last summer or the year before, when they were talking about a big bacon shortage?
Yes.
How'd that one shake out? Was there a shortage of bacon that year?
Not that I'm aware of. No.
It's like the toilet paper scandal that was, COVID.
But that, I think that stemmed from California putting in rules I think it was to do with like farrowing crates and animal welfare.
Oh, okay.
And so it was going to put all these like huge pork houses in California they were going to not be able to produce because they wouldn't meet the new state standards.
Okay.
By, you know, confining these sows where they can't turn around and can't crush their babies. And that's one, like, I don't know. You can go both ways on that one because,
yeah.
I mean, I'd just rather not have pigs raised in that situation anyway. That's why we raise pigs differently and buy them from people who raise them differently. The piglets that we do raise, but like, you know, you don't want to have all your piglets getting laid on by the...
So,
there's just things like that. But so anyway, it was something to do with that, I think, is why they were predicting a bacon shortage, because there's going to be a general pork shortage is what they were worried about.
Okay.
So, and then it just made news because, I mean, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And if it's talking about no bacon on the shelves, that's going to lead. So that's bad news.
I never heard it.
Bad news is way more marketable than good news.
For sure.
But yeah, so I don't know. I don't have any other articles, I don't think. But,
okay. Well, what about...
Yeah.
So I'll tell real quick. I know sometimes we're not going to have something to cover on the what are you listening to thing, but I watched a documentary. Actually, it was last night that I wanted to throw out. It's on... I think I watched it on YouTube. It's called Unbranded.
Okay.
And it is a documentary that covers these four recent college graduates. I forget where they graduated from, but these four buddies who they bought these Mustangs, you know, where they do all the Mustang work out on the Great Plains and all. I'm not even sure which states they came from, but they went in, they broke all of them, and then they actually rode on horseback on nothing but Mustangs for pack horses and everything from the Mexico border all the way to the Canadian border.
Wow.
It was over a 4-month trip.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah, but it was a really cool documentary to watch, so I recommend it to anybody who enjoys that kind of stuff. It was called Unbranded.
Nice.
About you, anything new you've been watching or listening to?
No, I really haven't. I can't even think of anything, actually. Yeah, I've just been listening to a lot of my usual stuff. And
okay.
Yeah, nothing. Hey. Nothing. I just got a reminder from Audible that I have a lot of credits to use, so I got to dive into some book.
Yeah.
For.
So I started.
For the season.
I did start that Meat Eater Long Hunter that I was telling mm-hmm. you about. And I like it a lot, but what I have found, I need to be able to sit down and focus. To really soak in. Like
dense.
Yeah, it's some serious listening with a lot of, I mean, just a lot of stuff you've never heard before.
Yeah.
A real deep dive on that period of history, which I find very interesting, but it's not a, for me anyway, it's not a multitasking listen. And it's yeah. only on audiobook, so it's not even one of those that you can go buy and read if you want to. It's a listen only.
Huh. Is it on Audible?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, stay tuned for the upcoming lambing episode. We've got a couple other people we've started kind of talking to and trying to set up some dates of getting some more guests on here. So that's coming down the line. I didn't throw out the socials at the beginning of this, but I could take this opportunity. AppalachianFarmcast@gmail.com. Appalachian_Farmcast on Instagram. AppalachianFarmcast on Gmail. Thanks everybody for stopping in, checking it out. Take a few minutes to give this a rating. Tell somebody else about it. Share the word. Spread the word. Share the podcast.
Yeah, write a review.
Yeah. Make it a good one.
A good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
All
it's
right.
a bad one. Again, keep it to yourself.
All right. Well, I've been Cody Brabham from Winnow Glen Farm.
All right. And I have been Tyler Rice from Pike Mountain Farm. Thank you all for listening.
Catch you later.